And we are on air for Fanfer Racing's NASCAR weekend preview of Martinsville. Short track racing on the docket for tonight, and we'll talk all about it throughout our show. Joining me shortly will be our co-host, Jay Huseman. But for right now, I just want to let everybody know what our plan is for tonight. First, we're going to offer some updates from the Arthur Menard series. At 8:40 tonight, our guest is Regina Cervantes with Rev Racing, and we'll talk to her about an upcoming race at Hickory Motor Speedway. And also, we will be talking to her about racing at Rev Racing in the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program. At the top of the hour, we're going to get into the SRL race that's taking place this weekend. We'll talk all about that. Then we'll get into the Truck Series race that's not happening this weekend. We'll provide a few updates in that regard. And then at 9:30, we'll talk about the upcoming races at Martinsville, the Xfinity and the Cup Series races at Martinsville Speedway this weekend. Now, tonight, there's a Whelen Modified race that's taking place. So we're definitely looking forward to that. I'm not sure where Jay is. He's normally here by now, so I'm going to try and see if I can't figure out what's going on there. But anyway, I hope you can all hear me on the show here now. I'm sorry for the distraction as we take a look at what's going on here. Okay, now then, for tonight's show, again, at 10 o'clock is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off, and the Hot Topic Sound-Off will include Jay Huseman. We think Andy might be able to join in before we end our Hot Topics, not 100% sure, but Tommy Kraft will be here tonight as well. Joining me now is our co-host for tonight, and that is Jay.
Jay, are you here? Getting ready for our interview with John Hunter Nemechek with NEMCO Motorsports, and
dear,
he should be here very shortly.
I am so sorry. My computer is so glitchy tonight. I'm going to kind of hand this off to Jay Huseman right now so that Jay can kind of give you the ARCA updates while I restart my system here and get started all over again. So, Jay, I'm going to leave it to you.
Okay, I was making sure I was on there. I heard that interview come up, and I was like, I wasn't sure I was connected. My phone not being cooperative either, but...
Well, it's
sounds
my computer.
Like mine is hooked. Yeah,
go
that's
ahead.
What I it just tried to play an interview there as you introduced me. So I was like, I wasn't sure if it was on my end or not. But I will go through the ARCA Menard series here with their schedule and points as you try to reset your computer, if that's what you need to do.
Okay. And Regina Jay is coming on at 8:40, so I will keep an eye out for her as well.
Yeah, because I can't move that.
I can take care of that.
All right. So we'll start with the ARCA Menard series here. Their next race is going to be April 24th at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, Talladega Super Speedway. Take a look at their point standings here as I bring that up. Okay, it didn't give me their points. Where is their point standings?
It should be at the top, Jay, at the in the bar.
There we go. Try that way.
Yeah. Why don't we just tell them what the dates are for the next races at this point and not get into the point standings, because Regina's going to be on in just a few minutes.
Okay. So April 24th, 1 Eastern, noon Central for the main ARCA Menard series. Next up here for the ARCA West is the one I'm trying to pull up now.
Actually, you can go to the bottom of the main page, and it will give you all of them in one place.
Oh, shoot. And then I closed it. Hang on 1 second. Pull that back up.
Okay, let me see if I can pull it up.
Where are you looking at the bottom of
at the bottom
page?
Of the main page.
Okay, here
page.
We go. Yep, upcoming events. Okay, I see it now. The Arkham and Ards East Series, that'll be the Music City 200 as they return to the Nashville Fairgrounds. That'll be on May 8th at 8 p.m. Central, so 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. The Arkham and Ards West, we got to wait a little bit for them. The General Tire 200 will be on June 5th, and that'll be 2 p.m. Pacific time at Sonoma Raceway. And then the Sioux Chief Showdown, talked about that, a mixture of the all three of them are able to participate in that. That'll be May 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, taking place at Toledo Speedway. That'll be the HERS Potato Chips 200, and I believe that is the first of them. Now, going back for the Arkham Menard Series, the General Tire 200 on April 24th, that'll be on FS1. The Arkham Menards East Music City 200 at Nashville, that'll be on Track Pass. Also on Track Pass will be the West Series, General Tire 200 from Sonoma. And then the Toledo Speedway's Sioux Chief Showdown, that'll be covered on MAV TV. So again, you can always go to the Arkham Menards Home Series. They have a section there where you can log in there. If you don't have Track Pass, get signed up for that. If your cable company carries MAV TV, you find all kinds of good racing on there, I'll tell you that. All right. I don't know if Sharon, you were able to get reset there or not.
Not yet. Hang in there.
Okay. Well, whenever our guest comes on, if you just let me know, I can try and cover at least maybe the top of the points here for each series until she gets here. You know, we got another young female driver in the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program, so another great guest coming on here tonight. Sharon will introduce here in just a moment. She should be coming up in a couple of minutes. Looking at the Arkham Menard Series, two races in, two drivers each have a win. Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim each have one. Corey Heim has a two-point advantage. They are similar across their stat lines with that. One win, two top fives, two top tens. Third place is Drew Dollar. He's got one top five and two top tens, is 9 points back. Kyle Sieg in fourth, 12 points back. Two top fives, two top tens. And you got Thad Moffitt is your fifth place right now, 26 points back. He's got one top five and the one top ten. Still got another minute here. I'll try and get into the West and run through those real quick. Actually, I'm going to do the East since they're the next ones that are racing. I know the West Series, we got a little bit more time here before they run again in June. So the Arkham Menards East Series standings, they also have two races in. Sammy Smith with one win, two top fives, two top tens is your point leader. Max Gutierrez is the other one with the win. One top five, two top tens is 9 points back, but he's in third place. In between them, Taylor Gray, two races, two top fives, two top tens is 8 points back. There is an issue there. We'll probably touch on Hot Topics. He is injured. I do not know for how long he is going to be out. I know for the truck race coming up that he has been pulled. That team withdrew. So we'll get more information on that here a little bit later in Hot Topics. Fourth place is Max Gutierrez. I'm sorry, Mason Diaz is in fourth at 10 points back, two top fives, two top tens. And Joey East, two top fives, two top tens, as well as 15 points back. And then there's a bunch, 19 points back, 19, 20 back. Some of the guests we've had on, Daniel Guy, Parker Retzlaff, and Rajah Karuth as well has also been on the show in eighth, and they're all 20 points back is the biggest gap back there. So, again, that's only after two races. Arkham and RG seriously tight there at the top of the points. And do we have our guest on yet, Sharon?
I'm trying to get to it, Jay.
I'm
just having all kinds of
trouble.
I know
you're working with your computer system there. I'll go ahead, and while she's still trying to get that all sorted out there, the West Series only had one race, and it was a combination event there with the Arca Menard Series, so still haven't fully sorted that out, but it's one race. The winner of the race, Ty Gibbs, is your points leader. Corey Heim, 6 points back. Thad Moffitt, back 7. Kyle Sieg, 9 back. Derek Krause, 10 back. Jesse Love is going to be your first full-time regular, I believe, on the West Series, is at minus 11. Drew Dollar's in there at minus 11 points. Todd Suess at minus 13. Taylor Gray at minus 13. And Trevor Huddleston at minus 15. That's your top 10. But keep in mind, once the West starts running separate races, we'll see that sort itself out here amongst the West regulars. And there, Taylor Gray in 9th at minus 13. Believe he should be back in plenty of time for that race. Again, that one, next one for them doesn't come up until June 5th.
Okay, I'm not seeing that call come up yet, Jay, so go ahead and go through the points, and hopefully we'll hear from her soon. I'll see if I can find out what's going on there.
Okay. I believe I hit all three of the points there. We haven't run our first Sioux Chiefs showdown yet. I was going to try and bring up what I had. I don't know if I can do if Jayski had it up. Reference Taylor Gray being injured. I know it was on Twitter. I might have to go to Twitter to find it. Yeah, I'm not seeing it on Jayski. So we'll see what we can find here on Twitter real quick. You know, I saw several of them today from Bob Proctor as well as others here.
What are you looking for, Jay?
Let's see if I was going to give the story an update on Taylor Gray.
Yeah, it says that he's going to have a full recovery, but he's not going to be able to race at least the next couple of races. His third lumbar or fourth lumbar surgery on his back and some other things going on. So, and I think he has a second surgery coming up.
Broken left foot and ankle as well. Again, the good news is a full recovery. The DGR has withdrawn the number 17 truck, which was supposed to be at his debut at Richmond. So again, they don't give a time frame, but should be back for the ARCA series there. I'm not a doctor, so I can't even begin to estimate on that. Just thankful that, again, he is okay and is expected to make the full recovery.
Right. I guess it was a single car accident, so that's kind of good news in some sense as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, single car in Statesville, North Carolina, I believe.
Okay.
Got situated there now?
I'm trying. I still don't see Regina online here. I don't know if she's having trouble calling in. Did you have any trouble calling in, Jay?
I did, but I believe that was on my end on my phone because it was telling me I didn't have service. So I think that was on my end.
Oh, okay.
If you want, I know we're into the next 15 minutes here. Oops, I can start on the SRL if you wanted to, if you were trying to reach out to them through the PR.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and start on the SRL, and we'll see if we can't get that.
Coming up here, we got an immediate release from the Spears SRL Southwest Tour Series. I know Sal brought one of them. Has talked about that, the one we were able to cover. I know Sal has missed that show, but they're, the Spears Manufacturing 100 presented by Earnest Performance is the third of 10 events on the Spears SRL Southwest Tour Series for 2021, and it'll take place this weekend, April 10th, at Irwindale Speedway. Round number 3 here will pay $5,000 to the winner thanks to the winner's bonus from Earnest Performance. It'll be the second of 3 events at the Irwindale Speedway half mile Oval after opening the season with the Sunrise Florida All-Star Showdown 200. The final of those events will take place on July 17th. A couple of things here to hit. It's another big field as we have 30 super late models currently entered for this weekend's action. And the first two events of the season saw an average car count of 35 and a half. Keeping in mind it's an average. We didn't have half a car out there, at least not to start the race. Fans, this is good news. It says for the first time since COVID-19 hit, fans will be allowed at Irwindale Speedway. It does not have on here. You'd have to go to the Irwindale Speedway homepage to find out the limited capacity, I'm sure, that they're doing, but they at least are allowing some fans in. And we got four drivers that will be making their 2021 season debut in the Spears SRL Southwest Tour. Those include Mark Neff, Sean Woodside, Trevor Huddleston, and Ross Miska. Sean Woodside will make his series debut after scoring two victories in the NASCAR Southwest Tour. And that leaves us with 23 series regulars that have attended the first two events of the season. 21 of those drivers are on the entry list for this weekend's Spears Manufacturing 100 presented by Earnest Performance. When we take a look at the top 10, Preston Peltier leads the current championship standings with 340 points. He's followed by Buddy Shepard. We talked a lot about him. Jacob Gomes, Cale Kanke, Jace Hansen, Christian McGee, Derek Thorne, Cole Raz, Kyle Neveu, and Dylan Lupton. So a couple of names there we know. Now, the eight rookies that are entered into this weekend's event, they include Bruce Bezanson, Cole Raz, Buddy Shepard, Brandon Farrington, Mark Neff will be listed as a rookie, Corey Neveu as well, Austin Tom, and Dylan Garner. The current Rookie of the Year standings finds Buddy Shepard leading Cole Raz, Brandon Farrington, Corey Neveu, and Dylan Garner. We talked a little bit about that All-Star Showdown. That was won by Preston Peltier for $30,000. He was followed by Casey Roderick, Jace Hansen, Buddy Shepard, and Jacob Gomes. There's Peltier's second season opening victory at Irwindale, which accounts for both of his series wins. Talk a little bit just about Irwindale Speedway. This will be the 19th SRL event held at Irwindale Speedway. Derek Thorne has five SRL victories at the facility to lead all drivers. Overall, MK Kanke has three SRL victories and three NASCAR Southwest Tour Series wins for a total of six overall. And when we look at the SRL S2 Series Dominator, the Spears SRL Southwest Tour Series rookie Dylan Garner has three of the SRL S2 Series victories at Irwindale Speedway. I'll give you some information if you want to try and catch that race. The live stream, all 2021 Spears Southwest Tour Series, the Spears Manufacturing Modified Series, and the Spears Pro Late Model Series races are live streamed at www.spearsracing.tv. Tommy Mason and Jeffrey Best with the Low Budget TV, LBTV, will cover the action from Irwindale. Now, in all 2021 races for the Spears Southwest Tour Series, the Spears Manufacturing Modified Series, and the Pro Late Model Series will also be carried on MAV TV on a delayed basis. The broadcast times will be announced at a later date. And that pretty much covers there. And go into some of the other pre-entries if we need to.
I'm not.
Nope,
yeah,
okay.
You might do that. I don't know what happened to Regina. I know that sometimes things come up unexpectedly, and that sometimes prevents people from coming on the show, even though we planned in advance for her visit. Something must have come up. So when we get ready to go into our NASCAR preview, we can probably go to our 20-minute format, Jay.
Okay. All right. If she does happen to call in, otherwise we can adjust that back down as well. So.
Correct. Correct. Okay.
All right. For the pre-entry for the SRL Southwest tours here, mentioned Dylan Epson, Bryce Bezanson, Tracy Bolin in the 11B, not one I talked about yet.
Oh, Jay,
John
I
Dillon.
Believe she's here now.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so I'm going
to
bring her into the queue.
Switch over that then.
Okay. We'll have a little bit of an interview here with Regina Servan with Rev Racing and the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program. Regina, we're so happy you were able to be on the show tonight. I know you're part of the NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Touring Series, and you've got a race coming up at Hickory sometime soon here.
Hi, I'm very excited to talk to you. Sorry for the delay. I thought that I was going to receive the call, but, well, anyways, yes, I'm very excited. This is our second race with the team. It will be Hickory. We raced 2 weeks ago there. We finished fifth, so hopefully it will be a very good race.
Okay, now fifth place finish is a really good finish. Was there anything you learned? Is that a track that you race at frequently, or was that a new track for you?
Well, this is my first year racing late models. I don't know yet any track, but Charlotte Motor Speedway, the fourth mile, because I raced Legends last year, and Hickory is the only track that I know so far, so it could be my home track, it will be.
Okay, so you'll get to know Hickory very well. Just into perspective, Regina is actually from Mexico and has been a big part of the Peak racing series down there, but also you've raced trucks in Mexico as well. So this is your first year racing with Rev Racing. So was there anything that you learned at Hickory with your fifth place finish that you'll take with you in this next race?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, I raced in the trucks of Mexico. And they are very different compared to the late model. What I learned the most is how to be a little bit more aggressive in the track, and also like the new tires. Well, the tires are slicks, and in Mexico we use semi-slick, so they are a little bit different. And I definitely think that. That last race, it was a little hard for me to get used to the tires, but now that I know them, I know how they work, and I'm sure that we will have a better performance with those new tires.
Okay, so you've got one under your belt and more to look forward to for this season. Now, Regina, joining us is our co-host for tonight, Jay Huseman, and I know he has a few questions for you as well.
Perfect.
Jay?
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, I don't know what happened. Oh, wait a second.
From you.
Jay, we didn't hear that, so go ahead and start over again.
Okay. With the want to say thank you to Rev Racing. They've been great with it, with bringing us some guests to have on the past several weeks. So my question tonight for you, coming from Mexico, and I think back to when Daniel Suarez come to the States, come into some of these tracks that I'm sure as a race fan you've heard of, beginning to race at some of the historic racetracks, such as you mentioned Hickory Speedway, but some of the more historic short track grassroots tracks that you get to go to.
Well, I don't know all the schedule for this year, but I think that we will be visiting South Boston, Tri-County. So definitely, so I think that we're going to learn a lot on those short tracks. In Hickory, you see like all the drivers that have won like important drivers and very famous drivers. And, of course, I hope that one day I can be in that board.
Well, that kind of leads into my second question with that. Again, and I can only imagine, though, of you grow up watching some of your favorite drivers getting to race with that next generation of them. And you mentioned South Boston. I know the Burtons still run there. So to be able to race against the next generation of up-and-coming drivers, a fan of ones that you grew up as fan of.
Yeah, and I'm very excited because I have always seen that racing with drivers that have more experience will get me to that point to have the same experience that they have. So I think that going to South Boston and all those tracks with those with drivers that are very, very good will make me improve my performance and my driving one way or another if I want to be running up there.
With that, my last question is a follow-up to that. When you have a driver, and I know Kyle Busch even comes down and runs some of the late model races, if you get the chance to talk to him in a garage, how helpful they are. But even just if you're following them on the track, of being behind them and watching, what do you pick up by that of just racing around them, like you said?
I think that rolling speed on the center of the corner is one of the most important things. And to probably, if I see Kyle Busch racing, I will definitely, in the practice, go out and see where he's braking, where he's picking up the throttle, and try to get that confidence to go to the throttle in the same point that he's doing. Also, like talking about important drivers and very good drivers, Josh Berry, last year I saw him race so many races in Hickory, and his line was impressive. I have some videos, and I have been watching them trying to copy that line for the next races.
Well, that's great. I wish you the best of luck. I know Sharon, you mentioned coming off already a fifth place. Continue that momentum, and going back to the same track should do well for you. So good luck, and I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Okay, Regina, I see that you're also going to be racing in the 2021 Summer Shootout at Charlotte Motor Speedway this year. So how are you preparing for that?
For the Summer Shootout, I have been racing in iRacing. It has the Legend car and the fourth mile of Charlotte Motor Speedway. So I have been racing in the simulator, that track. Also, I have been, well, we haven't prepared a lot for the summer. We are more right now preparing, like, the cars for the late model racing. But when in May, we are going to start probably testing some laps in the Legend car. The summer shootout starts on June. So it will be a process. Mark Green is our coach driver development, and he's very good. He has won a lot of races in the master class. So obviously having him there will be an important factor because he knows all the tricks in that oval.
Absolutely. Mark Green will be a great coach for you in that regard. Now, also, you became a part of NASCAR's Drive for Diversity program, and it's actually your second season with Rev Racing. So this year you've kind of progressed to the NASCAR Weekly Touring Series, and you're going to be competing for Rookie of the Year in that series. Talk a little bit about what the program means to you, so, and coming into the States now to race.
Well, for me, the program is a great opportunity. I think that it's very good that they have these programs where, like, girls, Latin people, African Americans, and everyone can have an opportunity to get into the NASCAR world. And I also think that it it is a great program because it shows that nothing is impossible, that you can make it to the big leagues, and that, like, if you take out the fear and all those limits, you will achieve good and great things. And I also think that the diversity program is very good because it can bring more fans from all around the world. So I think that's a great opportunity for everyone, and it shows, like, the family. Like, I have always said that racing is about family environment, and with the program we can see that.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Regina. And I really like the point that you make that it brings new fans into the NASCAR racing world, if you will, because of people like you that are coming from Mexico and becoming a part of that program. I think it's awesome. And how difficult is it for you to make that transition from the Mexico racing series to Rev Racing and the Drive for Diversity program?
Well, it has been a little hard, especially for the language. I do speak English, but sometimes I don't know some words. Right now what I'm trying to do is being in the shop almost, well, every, like, Monday through to Friday, and I am there learning all the parts of the car in English, because in Mexico, I know English from school, but they don't show you, like, this is a stack or this is this, and, you know, from the car. So I have been trying to go to the shop every day to learn all those parts of the car so I can communicate better with my team. But I also have feel very welcome with all the crew, because I think that they understand that that I'm doing this transition, and they help me with everything. Like, sometimes I make, like, try to explain them with drawings or like with my hands, and they take the time to see what I meant, and they explain me how to communicate it better. So I'm very thankful with all the crew too. And also with my teammates, that if I have questions, I always ask them, like, how could I do this and that. So definitely I would say that the most difficult part for me has been, like, the communication part, but I think I'm improving a lot in that too.
I would agree with you again. I think that you are doing a great job with your English. I know that you speak much better English than I do Spanish, so I give you a lot of credit for what you're doing. And I think I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do in the series this season. And we hope that you'll come back and visit with us again as the season progresses.
Well, thank you for receiving me. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And I have a lot of fun talking about the program, talking about what I'm doing right now with Rev Racing. And thank you for taking the time. It was a pleasure.
Oh, it was a pleasure for us as well, Regina. Good luck at Hickory, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Perfect. Thank you. And, yeah, we need to talk to talk soon, and hopefully with a better result.
Okay. Sounds like a good plan to me.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Regina. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Bye.
All right.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. All right. That is Regina Cervant, and she is with Rev Racing and NASCAR's Drive for Diversity program. And what a pleasure talking with her, Jay. She's got a lot of energy and very vivacious, I think.
I can't believe, again, of comprehending that kind of change. She mentioned there of knowing English, but when it comes to the car, I mean, we talk about it, and I go back to the movie Days of Thunder. Even figuring out race language between you and your crew chief and your crew is one thing, but to be able to put it from a different language then into it as well. And the fact that she puts a focus on that, going to the shop just for that, and then talking about learning from other drivers. She mentioned Josh Berry, a great one to have been able to race with, as he's now an Xfinity Series driver to follow and learn from, not just all of your bigger stars. I mentioned Kyle Busch that I know does some races, but seeing the ones that you know are advancing or, you know, above you, and accepting that challenge. I know we talk about that in those series, accepting that challenge and wanting that to race against them because that's your measuring stick.
Exactly. So it's really cool. And the fact that she, you know, if she can't put it into words, she's able to draw pictures and they can figure out, they take the time to figure out what it is that she's talking about and everything. I think it's fantastic.
Well, and I will say that when I was in the military and going to other countries, yeah, you find a way to communicate, whether it be, yeah, she mentioned drawing pictures or whatever it be, you find a way to communicate. And I've used the same statement you did there. You know, her English is much better than my Spanish or whatever country I'm in. So, you know, they always feel that like an embarrassment. I'm like, trust me, I would not be able to reciprocate that and speak anything in your language but one or two words here and there.
Exactly. So I think Regina does a really fine job with her language. So with that, Jay, let's go ahead and get into our Truck Series updates. Just to let you know, the Truck Series is not racing this weekend, but they will be racing at Richmond Raceway on Saturday, April the 17th in the Toyota Care 250, and we'll definitely look forward to telling you more about that when that race comes up. But we also want to give you a few updates, and let's take a look at the Rookie of the Year competition that's going on there. Jay has to call back in. So we're going to wait for him to call back in. And in the meantime, I guess I will give you the update here on the Rookie of the Year. Right now, Josefar maintains the Sunoco Rookie of the Year lead after taking a one-point lead in the yearly standings after Atlanta. Josefar finished 21st on the Bristol Dirt to up his advantage to 14 points over Chandler Smith, coming out of Thunder Valley. So Smith finished 34th after being caught up in a multi-truck incident. So the remainder of the standings pretty much stayed the same after Bristol. Chase Purdy was the highest finishing rookie at Bristol. He finished 18th. Haley Deegan was 19th. Josefar and Smith both raced in the Truck Series race at Richmond last year. And in that race, Smith finished 12th and Josefar finished 22nd. So right now you have Carson Josefar at 109 points, Chandler Smith at 95, then Chase Purdy at 71, followed by Haley Deegan. So there's a close contest there, followed by Chris Wright. So that is pretty much the update there. Let me see if I've got Jay back. I'm going to bring Jay back into the queue.
Okay, this must Jay, be the time of night my phone just likes to take a nap. Yeah, sorry.
So, yeah, if you can go ahead and get into the next section here, that would be great.
All right, then you kind of hit on it there. They're preparing for round two in the return to Richmond as the Camping World Truck Series will be sitting out Martinsville spring weekend, but getting ready for the Toyota Care 250 April 17th at Richmond. They first ran at Richmond back from 1995 to 2005. But then took a hiatus from the track until returning in 2020. And Grant Infinger won that return trip, which was the final race of the regular season for the series last year. His Thor Sport Racing teammate Matt Crafton and Ben Rhodes finished second and third respectively in that race, with Brett Moffitt and Tyler Ankrum rounding out the top five. Now this year, Richmond is the sixth race of the season for the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. In 2020, the sixth race of the season last year was at Pocono. That was run by Brandon Jones. in the earlier mentioned number 51 truck for Kyle Busch Motorsports. So the group that's running here at Richmond don't have a whole lot of experience on this track, but that also makes it that much more exciting.
Yes, indeed. Let me go up here to the next section. I tell you what, Jay, we're having one of those nights. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong. So apologies to everybody tonight as you're tuning in. I know it sounds like we're a little discombobulated, and in a lot of respects we are, because we've got a lot of different challenges that we're dealing with here. So please bear with us. Okay, moving on here. Kyle Busch Motorsports number 51 actually gets their 51st victory for the second week in a row. The number 51 at Kyle Busch Motorsports visited Victory Lane, and the win marked the 51st for that truck number. Then the victory came in a very unusual fashion without the team's namesake behind the wheel. It was Martin Truex Jr. Making his first Camping World Truck Series start since 2006 and only the third of his career. Nearly 2 weeks ago at Bristol Motor Speedway on dirt, it was a way to get some time in on the dirt track before the Cup Series race, and he made the most of the outing by winning the race in a very dominant fashion. Now, the week before that, it was Kyle Busch winning at Atlanta Motor Speedway for the 50th victory in the number 50. Busch has recorded 40 of those 51, 40 of those 51 victories. Excuse me. My screen just scrolled up for no reason. Okay. Including the first win on May 19th in 2006 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. In fact, he won the first 13 races in the 51 truck. So a total of 8 different drivers have won in that truck. Eric Jones is second on the list in wins with 4. The first for him coming at Phoenix in November of 2013. He then posted 3 wins in the truck in 2014 and Iowa, Las Vegas, and at Phoenix. Eric Almirola recorded wins number 14 and 15 in the 51 at Dover in Michigan in 2010. And Denny Hamlin then won at Martinsville in 2012. Daniel Suarez won at Phoenix in 2016 for the only victory for that truck number that year. Greg Biffle won in the number 51 at Texas in 2019, while Brandon Jones won at Pocono just last year. Since the number was first run in the series in 2006, there have only been 3 seasons in which the truck has not posted multiple wins. That was in 2006, 12, and 16. The 9 wins by the 51 were in 2014, were the most in a year for any truck in the truck series. So pretty cool stats there for the number 51 in the Camping World Truck Series, Jay.
Well, I'll tell you what, if we'd have been playing a trivia game, I would have gotten that one wrong. I was not aware Eric Almirola got, wins number 14 and 15.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Okay, let's go ahead and move on now to, I guess we're still on schedule. Well, we can go ahead and move to the Xfinity Series. What we'll do, Jay, is if we end up with extra time, how did that happen? If we end up with extra time, what we're going to do is get into our fantasy group thing, okay?
Okay. All right.
Okay. So we're going to go to the Xfinity Series. The Cookout 250 at Martinsville Speedway is this Friday. That's tomorrow night, April the 9th. At 8 p.m. Eastern Time. The coverage will start at 7 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, and radio coverage will be on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They will be racing a distance of 131.5 miles over 250 laps. Stage 1 ends on lap 60, Stage 2 on lap 120, and the final stage ends on lap 250. So getting into the Xfinity Series here, we do have a lot of information to cover. We'll see how this goes, Jay.
All right. Well, we'll start with some double duty this weekend. as Collegs Racing's Justin Haley would be pulling double duty, competing in both the NASCAR Cup Series and the NASCAR Xfinity Series this weekend at Martinsville Speedway. Haley made his series track debut last season at Martinsville, where he started third and finished 12th. He also has six starts at Martinsville in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, posting two top tens. So we'll see how that works out for him in Collegs Racing.
Okay, on the manufacturer side, Chevrolet is leading the Manufacturers Championship standings. Right now, they have three wins and 221 points. Myatt Snyder, A.J. Allmendinger, and Justin Allgaier got Chevrolet their first three wins. Now, Ford is second in the standings with two wins and 211 points. Ford has two wins, and those came from Austin Cindric in the season opener and again at Phoenix Raceway. Toyota is third with one win, 214 points. Their win came from Ty Gibbs at the Daytona Road Course. So that's where we are from the manufacturing perspective. How about the rookie?
All right. We'll get into that Sunoco Rookie of the Year update here. With six races in the books for the 2021 Xfinity Series, standings are still tight. Mentioned Joe Gibbs Racing's Ty Gibbs. He's leading the charge at this point. Won two awards in total of 88 points. He's made two starts so far in 2021, including the first Xfinity Series start of his career, where he walked away with that win at the Daytona Road Course. Now, his second start was at Phoenix Raceway, where he finished runner-up after starting 27th, and he will be back in the number 54 Toyota this weekend. Now, our guest talked about Josh Berry. He's second in the rookie standings, now with 79 points and one award. Berry has made five starts for Junior Motorsports this season, has a best finish of 7th at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Unfortunately, Berry has been the victim of some on-track incidences, though, resulting in a 38th place finish last week in Atlanta and a 36th place finish at Phoenix the week prior. Of his five starts, three have been DNFs. Now, third in points, the rookie standings, that's Ryan Vargas. He's got 60 points and three rookie awards so far this season. Vargas has run in all six races so far this year, has a best finish of 18th in the season opener at Daytona. Two others that have declared for rookie points in 2021, Jordan Anderson and Sam Mayer, have yet to make a start, so they're currently fourth and fifth in the standings. I know Sam Mayer is splitting a ride. Jordan Anderson has to be able to qualify, so there are some circumstances with that.
Yes, indeed. Okay, now it's time to show me the money. The Dash for Cash program is back. The NASCAR Xfinity Series Dash for Cash program was designed to add elements of unpredictability and drama leading up to and in four designated races. They also want to increase on-track competition, engage fans, reward and recognize NASCAR Xfinity Series regular competitors, and this weekend's program makes it official start for 2021 with four drivers, including Justin Allgaier, Harrison Burton, Noah Gragson, and A.J. Allmendinger, all vying for that $100,000 bonus payout. Now, the NASCAR Xfinity Series Dash for Cash will take place at four tracks this year, including Martinsville Speedway this weekend. Then it's Talladega Super Speedway on April the 24th, Darlington Raceway on May 8th, and Dover International Speedway on May 15th. The March 20th race at Atlanta Motor Speedway was the initial qualifier for this year's Dash for Cash program. Now, the top four full-time finishers in the Atlanta race qualified for the first round of the Dash for Cash at Martinsville this weekend. The first of the four Dash for Cash competitors to finish at Martinsville will win the $100,000 bonus. The Dash for Cash winner and the next three highest finishing full-time NASCAR Xfinity Series drivers will then qualify for the next round of the Dash for Cash program at Talladega. That format will continue at Darlington and again at Dover. So looking at it, right now, the Dash The playoff outlook. Why don't you take a look at that, Jay? I kind of skipped that.
All right, not a problem. We'll pick up there. When we look at the playoffs, Austin Cindric has got 2 wins already and 14 playoff points, so he is most assuredly locked in. A.J. Allmendinger, Myatt Schneider, Justin Allgaier also have 1 victory, which so far we have yet to see 1 victory not get you in. So right now they are considered locked in on points. They are at 194. Austin Cindric was at 277. He's leading out right no matter what. AJ is at 194. Myatt Schneider, 179. Justin Allgaier at 171. Now, being the victory automatically puts you in, Daniel Hemric is currently fifth in points, 231 points, is the first one without a victory, but he does have 2 stage wins for 2 playoff points. He's 97 points above what would be the cutoff line. Harrison Burton is at 212. 78 points up. Justin Haley, we talked about him doing double duty at 193, has 1 playoff win. He's got 59 points to the good. And we have cousin Jeb Burton. He's at 187, 53 points above the line. And here's where we get a little interesting. Jeremy Clements, 165 points, 31 points to the good. Brandon Jones, 155 with a playoff point, 21 points up. Brandon Brown, still hanging in there, 142 points, is 8 points to the good. Riley Herbst, 12th place, which is the cutoff line, 135 points, is 1 point to the good. The bad news there, 13th, Junior Motorsports, Michael Annette, 134, is 1 point back. Noah Gregson had a rough start to the season. He's been back on track, though, 114 points, is 21 points out. And then you got Landon Castle at 112, is 23 back, and that's in 15th. That's our window right now around that bubble. With 5 different race winners locked in so far. With 5 different racers so far in 2021, 4 drivers locked into the NASCAR Xfinity Series playoffs, there's still a lot of shakeups each week in that playoff picture. Justin Allgaier mentioned took the 4th playoff spot with his win in Atlanta over the weekend, joining Cindric, Allmendinger, and Schneider on that winner's list. Mentioned Daniel Hemric, stayed consistent. He has the highest playoffs point without that win and has a 97-point cushion above the cut line. In terms of the biggest surprises in the playoff outlook so far, there's 2 drivers that stand out. Mentioned Jeremy Clements has been in the top 12 for most of the season and shown that speed all year, currently 31 points above the cut line. He finished 15th at Martinsville last season. And then the same goes for Brandon Bilt's motorsports driver, Brandon Brown, having a career season so far, a career best finish at Phoenix Raceway. In total, Brown has made 6 starts this season, posting 1 top 5 and 3 top 10. He currently 8 points above that playoff cutoff line. His finish at Martinsville last year was 18th. So that playoff bubble here in the Xfinity Series is going to be really interesting in these next few races.
I would agree. It's going to be fun to watch. All right, let's talk about the Burton Family Fun at Martinsville. Joe Gibbs Racing's Harrison Burton is the only driver entered in the Xfinity Series race this weekend with a previous win at Martinsville. That makes him an obvious favorite. But if his cousin Jeb Burton were to win this weekend, he and his father Ward Burton would join Jeff and Harrison as the second Burton family father-son duo to win at the historic Martinsville Speedway. Now, Jeff Burton has 2 wins at Martinsville, 1 in the Cup Series in 97 and 1 in the Xfinity Series in 90. Harrison joined him in visiting Victory Lane at Martinsville last year in the Xfinity Series playoff race, a triumph that helped secure the 2020 NASCAR Xfinity Series Sunoco Rookie of the Year honors. Now, Ward Burton has also won at Martinsville, and much like his brother Jeff, in the NASCAR Xfinity Series at Martinsville, he won in 1993. Jeb Burton is having a great start to the 2021 season, driving with Colleague Racing. In six starts, he has collected three top fives and five top tens. He's also ranked sixth in the series driver standings. Now, last season, he made a series track debut at Martinsville driving for Junior Motorsports. He started eighth and raced his way up to fourth place. Jeb also has experience in the Camping World Truck Series at Martinsville, in where he made eight starts on the Points Mile track, putting up a pole, two top fives, and three top ten finishes. I know Martinsville is one of Jeb's favorite tracks, and I look for him to have a good run this weekend.
Well, he certainly got the momentum going for him there this season with college racing. Now, we have had a two-week break for the NASCAR Xfinity Series, but they will be back in action at the Paperclip under the lights at Martinsville Speedway for that Cookout 250, which will be 8 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, April 9th. And going back, the 2020 season marked the first year the Xfinity Series raced at the .526-mile paved track since 2006. And it was Kevin Harvick that won the race in 2006. And prior to that, the Xfinity Series had last raced at Martinsville since 1994. So in total, there's been 35 races at the Virginia Short Track when Sam Ard won the inaugural one back in 1982. I mentioned Joe Gibbs Racing's Harrison Burton taking home that victory last season after starting in the 10th position in his rookie year. The race at Martinsville last season was the final playoff race to secure Championship 4. Burton won that race but was not in the playoffs after he had been eliminated in the first round. Justin Allgaier was the highest finishing playoff driver, having finished second, and Noah Gregson behind him in third. Race lasted a total of 2 hours, 7 minutes, 56 seconds. Average speed, 61.673 miles per hour. 10 cautions for 63 laps and 11 lead changes. And there were 1,276 green flag passes for 6.8 per green flag lap. So some things we got to look forward to there. Now, Allgaier's 2021 NASCAR Xfinity Series, again, didn't start out the way he had hoped for. In five races, the driver of the number 7 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet had only one top 10 finish. Allgaier had been involved in various on-track incidents and started the season at Daytona International Speedway by starting second but finishing 28th. But he turned that all around at Atlanta Motor Speedway 2 weeks ago by winning that race, taking home his first victory of the season while punching his tickets to the playoffs. The win marked the 15th victory of Allgaier's career. As Sharon mentioned, Friday night's race will be 131.5 miles or 250 laps, stage 1 ending on lap 60 and stage 2 ending on lap 120. The metrics they have laid out, Harrison Burton will start on the pole for the Cookout 250 with Justin Allgaier joining him on the front row. So, again, not a lot of history there for these drivers, but they – are in the Xfinity Series for a reason, because that's where their names are made.
Yes, indeed. It's gonna be an exciting race, I think, in this Xfinity Series on Friday night. Okay, next up we've got the Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 500 at Martinsville Speedway on Saturday, April the 10th. Again, a night race at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Pre-race coverage will start at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1, and radio coverage will be on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 263 miles over 500 laps. The first stage ends on lap 130. The second stage will be another 130 laps, ending on lap 260, and then, of course, the final stage ends on the last lap 500. Okay, let's move on with our rookie update here in the NASCAR Cup Series.
Well, the Sunoco Rookie of the Year update here is Stuart Haas Racing's Chase Briscoe having a command of the 2021 Cup Series rookie standings. Over second place, that goes to Anthony Alfredo for Front Row Motorsports. Briscoe is 46 points of Alfredo following that seventh race of the season, which was on the Bristol Dirt Race. Both drivers will be making their series track debut, though, this weekend, with Briscoe some experience in Martinsville, though, as he made his NASCAR National Series debut at the Paperclip last season in the Xfinity Series, where he started fifth and finished seventh. It plays out like a short track, and we've seen Briscoe good on the short track, so we'll see how those two battle it out on the track.
Yes, indeed. Okay, there's also a brief history of the unique trophy at Martinsville Speedway, one that's coveted by a lot of the drivers. There's nothing else out there like it, and that's what makes it so unique. The Martinsville Speedway trophy, that is. We're talking about the 7-foot-tall trophy known as the Grandfather Clock or the Ridgeway Clock. It was presented for the very first time in 1964 to NASCAR Hall of Famer Fred Lorenzen. Back then, and then for many years after, the trophy was manufactured just down the road from the iconic short track. The clockmakers, Howard Miller, then bought Ridgeway, who were the manufacturers of the clock, and started making them in their unit in Zeeland, Michigan. So it's kind of really cool because, like I say, there's nothing else out there like it, and it's what makes Martinsville so unique and a race that every driver wants to win just so they can get that grandfather's clock.
Well, you're right about that. Everybody wants one, and I have one, except mine, I think, is 7-inch in a replica. I got to stand next to have a picture taken to the real one, but.
Gotcha.
All right. Martinsville Speedway and God's Pit Crew partner to host a food box distribution event for this week. As NASCAR returns to racing at Martinsville Speedway, God's Pit Crew and Mercy Crossing are partnering with the track to distribute farmers to families food boxes on Wednesday, April 7th from 3 to 7 p.m. Jeb Burton is a native of South Boston, Virginia, and driver of the number 10 Colic Racing in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, will be joining to support the event, benefiting families in Henry County, Virginia. There will be 2,400 farmers-to-family food boxes distributed to the residents of Martinsville and Henry County. The food boxes contain 30 pounds of fresh produce, meats, and dairy products. Recipients will receive a case of Propel-flavored water, and Henry County residents will enter from on Industrial Park Road and then turn right onto Clover Road to follow signs to the distribution sites. Little information here, God's Pit Crew is a nonprofit, faith-based crisis response team whose mission is to bring hope, healing, and restoration to hurting people in times of crisis. Since 1999, God's Pit Crew has responded to over 140 disasters in 28 states and 13 countries, and also distributes millions of food and drink products in their local region through their biweekly distribution program. So far in 2021, God's Pit Crew has responded to 5 disasters, including winter storms that impacted Virginia and Texas, severe flooding in Kentucky, and most recently, the tornado outbreak that caused some damage here in Alabama and Georgia. So a great thing there with, I love that program.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I love that they call it God's Pit Crew. They're doing wonderful, and I really, really admire that. Now, another good thing that's going to be happening this weekend, in advance of the Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 500 in the Cup Series race, the NASCAR and Martinsville Speedway will be honoring frontline healthcare workers at Sova Health Martinsville with a NASCAR Hall of Parade led by NASCAR Hall of Famer Rusty Wallace and Martinsville Speedway President Clay Campbell. So after Wallace and Campbell led the NASCAR Hall of Parade around the Sova Health Martinsville campus and Martinsville Speedway's Ford Mustang pace car, they were joined by Blue Emu Executive Vice President of Marketing Ben Blessing and Sova Health Martinsville Interim Chief Executive Officer Tori Shepherd for a ceremony to share gratitude to the frontline healthcare workers. In addition to the NASCAR Holler Parade, Blue Emu provided employees of the 220-bed facility located approximately 15 minutes away from the Speedway with samples of Blue Emu products. Sova Health Martinsville has served as the official healthcare provider for Martinsville Speedway for over 3 decades. So another really good thing that's happening this weekend at Martinsville to honor all the frontline healthcare workers at Sova Health.
Most certainly. Great things happening off the track as well as on the track as Logano win on the Bristol Dirt adds his name to the 2021 list of playoff and all-star race drivers. Team Penske's Joey Logano became the 7th different winner this season and in the process added his name to both the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs and the NASCAR All-Star Race, which will be at Texas Motor Speedway coming up on June 13th. The historic Bristol Motor Speedway Dirt victory marks the 10th consecutive season, going from 2012 to 2021, that Logano has won in the NASCAR Cup Series. Logano is now tied with his Team Penske teammate, Brad Keselowski, for the 3rd longest active streak of years with a victory, behind Kyle Busch, who's at 16 years with the victories from 2005 through 2020. Kevin Harvick is at 11 years, victories from 2010 to 2020. And then mentioned Brad Keselowski from 2011 to 2020. Now looking ahead to this weekend at Martinsville, Logano is preparing to keep his winning spoils flowing. He's the only active driver to win at all 4 of the current active short tracks on the NASCAR Cup Series schedule with that victory last weekend at Bristol Dirt. He also has wins at Martinsville back in 2018, Richmond in 2014 and 17, and then Bristol back in 14 and 15. In total, Logano has made 24 series starts at Martinsville, posting 5 poles, 1 win, 8 top fives, and 12 top tens. He finished 4th in the Martinsville spring race and 3rd in the playoff race last season. So that could put that streak in jeopardy of different winners so far. And I know we got a couple more that are looking to spoil that.
Yeah, there's a lot of drivers that would love to spoil that this weekend. Okay, let's take a look at the local angle because it takes a lot of different people from all over the country to make a NASCAR event run with the precision that we've all come to really appreciate and enjoy. Now, this weekend, we turn the spotlight to some team members who are from Virginia and a snapshot of their responsibilities. So let's start with David Jones from Roanoke, Virginia. He works at Starcom Racing for the number 00 car as a car chief. Also, Scott Woodfin from Colonial Heights, Virginia, with Chip Ganassi Racing and car number 1 is a hauler driver. Stephen Price from Lynchburg, Virginia, again from Chip Ganassi Racing and also Richard Childress Racing, and the number 1 is a rear tire changer. Stephen Price is from Chip Ganassi Racing for the number 1 as a rear tire changer. Now, Ethan Tingler from Radford, Virginia, is with Richard Childress Racing, the number 3 car, as a rear tire changer. Cliff Daniels, we know that name, Smithfield, Virginia person with Hendrick Motorsports and is the crew chief for the number 5. Also, Chris Haymaker from Mineta, Virginia, also with Hendrick Motorsports, and the number 9 is the front end mechanic. Tony Bove from Burlington, Virginia, at Hendrick Motorsports, also with the number 9, is the engine tuner. Then we go to Joe White from Windsor, Virginia, from Stuart Haas Racing, and the number 14, he's the spotter. Keith Eads from Arlington, Virginia, with Stuart Haas Racing's number 14, is the tire specialist. Also, we have Dwayne Zirkel, Ryder. He's from Roanoke, Virginia, and Roush Fenway Racing's number 17, hauler driver, but he's also the front tire catcher. Jonathan Salmons, from Bassett, Virginia, also with Roush Fenway Racing's number 17, is the engine tuner. Bradley Donaghy from Orange, Virginia, and Joe Gibbs Racing, the number 19 tire carrier. Jeff Curtis from Fairfax Station, Virginia, is with the number 19 Joe Gibbs Racing lead engineer. Chris Jones from Lake Smith Mountain Lake, Virginia, and the number 20 from Joe Gibbs Racing is the front-end mechanic. Then Chris Sherwood from Portsmouth, Virginia, and Joe Gibbs Racing's number 20 car chief. Also, we have Brian Goodman from Midlothian, Virginia, and he's with Richard Petty Motorsports. And the number 34, he's the engine tuner, as well as the social media manager and hospitality. Then we go to Bradley Sisson from King George, Virginia. He's with, this gets a little confusing, he's with Richard Petty Motorsports and the number 43 car. I guess the previous guy, Brian Goodman, is actually with Front Row Motorsports. Bradley Sisson with King George, Virginia, with Richard Petty Motorsports, number 43, is the manager in hospitality, as well as the gas man and the pit department. Then we move on to James J.P. Kelly from Luray, Virginia, and Trackhouse Racing in the number 99 car. He is the foreman. And Lamar Neal from Virginia Beach, Virginia, from Trackhouse Racing's number 99, is the tire carrier. It's a little confusing how they had that listed, but I think I got through it all, Jay.
Yeah, that chart doesn't quite line up right. The one takeaway there, we talk a lot about drivers, and I got one coming up here, but the crewmen and all the different areas that you mentioned there, home race for them. So that's great to see them be able to be in front of their family and friends as well.
Absolutely. Now, I love the spotlight on them.
Yeah. When it comes to the drivers, though, one Virginia native returning to one of his favorite tracks, that's Denny Hamlin. And Joe Gibbs Racing driver returns to Martinsville Speedway on one of his most successful tracks, as the NASCAR Cup Series driver standings leader is looking for his first win of 2021. The Chesterfield, Virginia native also leads the Cup Series in victories at the historic Martinsville track with five, coming in 2008, 09, a 2010 sweep, and then 2015, and has all the intentions of making it six in Saturday night's Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 500 on April 10th. And Hamlin's consistency has been the key to his early success in the NASCAR Cup Series driver standings this season. In seven starts this year, he's collected 6 5 finishes, which is the series most, and now sits 58 points ahead of the second place, Joey Logano. Among active drivers, Hamlin is one of the most prolific short track competitors in the series. He is tied with Kurt Busch for the second most short track cup wins among the drivers entered this weekend, with 10 victories each. Now, specifically at Martinsville, Hamlin has made 30 starts, posting 4 poles, 5 wins, 15 top fives, and 21 top tens. But his Martinsville Speedway accolades don't stop there. The NASCAR Cup Series pre-race loop data has him leading just about every category among the active drivers heading into Saturday night. The average finish at 9.933 is series best. Average running position of 9.622, series best. The driver rating is 105.0 as a series best. The 984 fastest laps run, series best. Now, 12,039 laps in the top 15. That equals 80.1%. That's only second most. But then with the 1,024 quality passes, That puts him back at the series most. Hamlin finished 11th in last season's playoff race at Martinsville and will start on the front row come Saturday night. Now, he's one of my hopes to continue the streak of different winners.
There you go. Okay, let's talk about the showmen, the short track showmen. Since the first NASCAR Cup Series season in 1949, short tracks, a track less than a mile in length, have graced the competitive schedule and been part of the fabric that makes up the sport. Now, NASCAR Hall of Famer, aptly nicknamed the King, Richard Petty scored 138 of his record 200 NASCAR Cup Series victories on short tracks, the series' most short track wins of all time. He also holds the record for the most wins at a single NASCAR Cup Series track, posting 15 victories at this weekend's venue, Martinsville Speedway. Among the active drivers this weekend, Ken have posted wins on short tracks in the NASCAR Cup Series, led by Joe Gibbs Racing's Kyle Busch with 16 short track cup victories. Team Penske's Joey Logano is the only driver to win at all four of the currently active short tracks on the Cup Series schedule, with his victory last weekend at Bristol in the dirt. So seven of the 10 active NASCAR Cup Series short track winners entered this weekend are looking for their first victory of 2021, and all seven are former winners at Martinsville. That includes Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, Kurt Busch, Brad Keselowski, Kevin Harvick, Ryan Newman, and 2020 series champion and the most recent winner at Martinsville, Chase Elliott. So additionally, Stewart Haas Racing's Kevin Harvick is the only NASCAR Cup Series driver to win in all three national series at Martinsville Speedway. He has wins in the Cup Series in 2011, in the Xfinity Series in 2006, and in the Truck Series in 2009, 10, and 12. The only active driver with an Xfinity Series win at the track. So five other drivers are entered this weekend, have won in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series at Martinsville. 23-11's Racing's Bubba Wallace has two wins in 13 and 14. Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin won in the Truck Series in 2011 and 12, and Kyle Busch in 2016 and 19. Each have two wins. So Hendrick Motorsports driver Chase Elliott has one Truck Series win in 2017, and Team Penske's Joey Logano also has a win in 2015. Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex Jr. is the defending winner of this event last season at Martinsville Speedway, his fourth career short track win. In total, Truex has made 30 starts at Martinsville, posting one pole, two wins, seven top fives, 13 top tens, and he's also led 987 laps at the paperclip, and just 13 shy of 1,000. So Truex won the Martinsville Spring Race last season, but finished 22nd in the playoff race there later in the year. So we'll see what he does this year. But that's some kind of interesting stats there when you look at the total tracks and short track winners. They include Martinsville, Richmond, Bristol, and, of course, Bristol on dirt with the win by Joey Logano this past weekend.
All right. Well, I keep talking about that streak possibly being extended or ending, and that hot streak is the trend of different winners to start the season, and it could reach eight this weekend. Now, Team Penske's Joey Logano made history last weekend, winning that first race on dirt in the NASCAR Cup Series in over 50 years and the first at Bristol Motor Speedway dirt. But in that process, Logano kept the streak of different winners to start the season alive with the 2021 season, the fifth different year in the Cup Series modern era, which runs from 1972 up until the current year of 2021, and that's to start with seven different winners or drivers in victory lane. And that goes back to joining a 2014, 2003, 2000, and 1991. Now, the NASCAR Cup Series is headed to the historic Martinsville Speedway to see if that streak can make it to eight different winners. Excuse me. If the 2021 season sees eight different victors, it'll become just the third different season in Cup Series modern era from 1972 to present to start with eight different winners in the first eight races, and that had joined the years 2003 and 2000. I'll come back and take a look at this so far. Oh, okay, actually, right here. So far this year, we got Michael McDowell won the Daytona 500, Christopher Bell winning the Daytona Road Course, William Byron at Homestead, Kyle Larson, Las Vegas, Martin Truex Jr. at Phoenix, Ryan Blaney at Atlanta, and then Joey Logano on the Bristol Dirt. Now, the modern era record of different winners to start a NASCAR Cup Series season is 10, and that was set back in 2000. NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Earnhardt Jr. is one that snapped that different winning streak by winning his second race of the 2000 season at Richmond in race number 11. So if we take a look at that historic run, it was Dale Jarrett that won the Daytona 500, Bobby Labonte winning at Rockingham, Jeff Burton at Las Vegas, Dale Earnhardt at Atlanta, Ward Burton at Darlington, Rusty Wallace at Bristol, Dale Earnhardt Jr. at Texas, Mark Martin at Martinsville, Jeff Gordon at Talladega, and Jeremy Mayfield at Auto Club. The next longest streak of different winners to start a season in the modern era, that goes to 2003, where we had nine consecutive different winners, and it was Kurt Busch that snapped the streak of different winners when he picked up his second race of the season, 2003 season, at Auto Club in race number 10. When we look at that one, we got Michael Waltrip winning the Daytona 500, Dale Jarrett at Rockingham, it was Matt Kenseth at Las Vegas, Bobby Labonte in Atlanta, Ricky Craven at Darlington, everybody remembers that race, Kurt Busch then followed it up at Bristol, Ryan Newman at Texas, Dale Earnhardt Jr. at Talladega, and Jeff Gordon at Martinsville. Again, the modern era, the record for the most different NASCAR Cup Series winners in a single season and in its entirety is 19, and that was set back in 2001. The series has also seen a total of 18 different winners, which is the second most, in a single season twice. That happened in 2002 and 2011. Last year, the 2020 season produced 13 different winners. So we really, right now, we're on a good pace to break a lot of these streaks. Even if somebody does happen to win their second race already this year, still looking at total different winners, whether or not we have 16 in the playoffs or not. So a lot of things on the line already this weekend at Martinsville.
Without a doubt. Okay, speaking of Martinsville, it's very short and sweet, but if you think about it, this is kind of, you've heard of the West Coast swing. Well, this is a short track swing, going to three different short tracks in three separate weekends, including the Bristol Dirt Track race that took place a week or so ago, Martinsville this weekend. Bristol is that half-mile short track. Then you've got Martinsville, also a 0.526-mile track. Asphalt paved straights and concrete corners, and then next week we'll be at the 3/4 mile asphalt paved Richmond Raceway. So Martinsville is actually the longest continuously running track in the Cup Series schedule and the only current active track that was part of the inaugural Cup Series season in 1949. Martinsville was originally a dirt track, and the facility hosted 12 Cup Series races on the then dirt surface before paving the track in the late summer months of 1955. Between the track's two cup races of that season, and in total there have been 144 Cup Series races at Martinsville Speedway, one in the inaugural year of 1949, and two races every year
since 1950. The first 500-lap event at Martinsville Speedway was in 56, with the concrete corners were added atop the asphalt in 1976. The 144 NASCAR Cup Series races at Martinsville Speedway are the second most series events run at a facility behind Daytona International Speedway's 148 races. Martinsville 144 races have produced 61 different pole winners, 54 different race winners, and 9 Cup Series winners are entered this weekend, including Denny Hamlin with his 5 wins, Keselowski with 2, Kurt Busch with 2, Kyle Busch with 2, Martin Truex with 2, Chase Elliott with 1, Joey Logano with 1, Kevin Harvick with 1, and Ryan Newman with 1. The first Cup Series race at Martinsville Speedway was September 25th, 49, and was won by NASCAR Hall of Famer Red Byron, driving an Oldsmobile for car owner Raymond Parks. NASCAR Hall of Famer Richard Petty leads the Cup Series wins at the Speedway with 15 victories in 60, 62, 63, 67 sweep, 68, 69 sweep, in 1970, 71, 72 sweep, in 73, 75, and 79. The most of any driver in the series, and he's at a single track. He's also won 15 races at North Wilkesboro, and Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin leads the Cup Series among active drivers with wins at Martinsville Speedway with 5 victories in 2008, 9, 10, where he swept, and in 2015. This weekend's Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 500 on Sunday is 500 laps, or 263 miles, broken up into the 3 stages that we've already covered. So this weekend's starting lineup was determined by the Metric qualifying. Last week's winner, Joey Logano, will start on the pole, and Logano will be joined by series standings leader Denny Hamlin on the front row. So a lot of good things about Martinsville Speedway there. We've got a couple minutes as we transition to our Hot Topic Sound Off, Jay, so why don't you go ahead and give us a fantasy update?
All right. Let's see. We'll start with the truck series. I don't know if I get paid to do this, but Sharon is leading that series. I don't know if that's why she always wants to talk about that one, but Sharon's got 27 points. Andy's at 21. Sam at 18. Mike is at 16. Tommy and I are tied at 15. So that's your top group there. The Xfinity Series, top 4. Owen is leading this one at 28. Tied because Andy is also at 28. James is at 24. Mike is at 22. On the Cup Series, I lead that one with 46 points. But right there with me, Sam at 39, Sharon at 38, as well as Mike at 38. And Owen at 33, so only 13 points all the way down to fifth place there. You heard several names repeated there. Sharon, you also then lead the overall by 82 points, or at 82 points. Mike is at 76. Sam and I are at 75, and Owen at 73. And each race being worth 8 points, that means there could be 16-point swing just this weekend with 2 races here at that historic Martinsville.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jay, in the years that we've been doing this, and I'm not sure how many years it's been, I have not been in this position very often. So I'm going to enjoy my time in the sunlight here.
I was going to say, I know the first year, I think I pretty much had it locked down. Then Andy and I, you had a couple in there, but Andy and I pretty much dominated. The last 2 years, as we've gotten 5, 6, 7, and now 8 players, really opened it up.
Absolutely. And I don't know, is that you, Andy? Are you here tonight? No, Andy is not here. Okay, but we've got a couple people calling in for Hot Topics here. So I know that one of you is Tommy Kraft.
Yep, I'm here. How are y'all?
Okay. Welcome, Tommy. It's good to have you here. We have somebody else here I'm not sure who it is. So let's go ahead and speak
hey,
up.
Hey, Sharon, it's Quentin.
Quentin, okay. I wondered who that was. I thought maybe Andy got off a little earlier than he anticipated. I know that he's planning to be here as well. Okay,
sorry,
so
I tried to shoot you a message earlier, and it just didn't work out.
Well, you know what? I've had all kinds of computer problems here tonight, so if I didn't get that message, I do apologize. But let's go ahead and get into our hot topics here tonight. And Tommy, I think I'm going to let you start us off here tonight.
Okay, let's start off with the roof over Bristol Motor Speedway.
Interesting. That is an interesting one. So, Quentin, your thoughts about the roof possibility at Bristol Motor Speedway?
You know, and that's exactly where I was going to go with this. You know, it was a bar discussion, drunk talk, call it what you will, back in 1997. And everyone thought that they could put something on the end of the exhaust systems to suck up the exhaust. And then, no, everyone else had a better idea where along the walls they could have a ventilation system. And, well, then the fight started. I love the idea, and I know that Bruton Smith's son, I believe it is, Marcus Smith, is seriously exploring it. He said that the subject came up 4 years ago. Oh, I'd say 24 years ago. And is there any possibility, without adding a gang of expense to the teams, because everything is going the way of electric cars. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's an intriguing idea, Jay. So what are your thoughts?
Well, to start with, again, I mean, if you got the money, anything's possible, I guess. And we've seen that from, especially with the Smith family. You talk about the lights at Charlotte. They said that couldn't be done and what it would cost, and they did it. So I would not put it past them. I know that discussion has kind of come up before, especially now if they're looking at possibly doing one race per year at Bristol of being dirt, because it protects that from being a rain out. A little bit different situation with a dirt track when you talk about rain and trying to get the track back. But as Quentin mentioned, there's a couple of factors there. And having been to St. Louis where they do the Dirt Nationals annually for late models and the sprint or midgets, there are some factors that I'm not sure are being considered or are going to have to be looked at. He mentioned ventilation. That's a huge one that the dome has to work with, and that's a 1/5 mile track that they build inside the dome at America Center there. The way the races are handled, instead of a caution flag and letting the cars run around, anytime the caution came out, they stopped the cars to prevent the fumes from accumulating with that. And then you have the dust and dirt factor. We saw how dusty Bristol got, and that was, I know Sharon shared the picture of the dust coming up out of the stadium. If you're got a dome on it, that's going to stay inside or, you know, depending on, again, on the ventilation. So I'm not sure. I don't – and I know they're, too, they're looking at – they've done a football game there at Bristol that a stadium can be used for more things if it isn't enclosed. So I understand that there's reason to look at it, but when it comes just to racing itself, even if it's a dirt track, I'm just not sure that's the right direction to go. However, again, they got the money and they'll put the thought into it and the process of looking at all aspects of it to make sure it's done good and isn't a hindrance to the fans when it comes to dust or ventilation problems. So it'll be interesting. And Quentin's right. I've heard that discussion come up multiple times So it'll be interesting. I will say this, when someone like Marcus Smith talks about it, it generally does happen. So it sounds to me like it's not just kind of a discussion, that there has been some heavy thought put into it.
Well, I agree, Jay. I think if anybody could make it happen, it would have to be that group of people. Because when you think about it, we thought it was a far-fetched idea when they talked about bringing how many tons of dirt into Bristol Motor Speedway and making it a dirt track, and yet that did happen. And you brought up some other ideas. They did make Bristol Motor Speedway a football stadium as well, and that helps the revenue of the track. Of course, if they put a roof over it, that's going to help the revenue even more. But you're right. There's so many things that need to be addressed. But let's not forget, there are other indoor racing tracks. You brought up the one in St. Louis. There's also the Tulsa, Oklahoma Expo Center that holds the Chili Bowl Midget Nationals every year. It's the largest national midget car event on the calendar with over 300 entries. And there's also an indoor track at Terre Haute, Indiana, that has indoor racing throughout the winter. So, of course, those venues don't have 100,000-plus fans that attend those races, which could add another caveat to the whole thing. But you guys are right. They have to address the air quality. They have to address the noise. They're saying that those things will be addressed. And I'll start where I began. I mean, I'll close with where I began, and that is if anybody can make it happen, it has to be Marcus Smith and his group. So we'll see what happens when it's all said and done. So, Tommy, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
I was immediately thinking when I first saw it that it was pointing towards the fact that they're probably going to put a roof over it because they're probably going to do more dirt races there in the future, which I know they were discussing that on the junior download, but this just more confirms it in my opinion, or what I'm thinking right now, because they already announced it for spring 22, and on the junior download it was sounding like they were saying basically that it's going to be there for years to come and the spring date, and maybe even possibly two dirt races every year there. So, but I was also thinking about how the Chili Bowl is an indoor dirt track. So it can be done for sure. And Marcus, I also want to bring up that Marcus Smith was talking about North Wilkesboro and bringing that back. So this guy, he gets it done. He got Bristol Dirt done. He did the iRacing thing for North Wilkesboro with Dale Jr. It'll probably happen. They'll work the kinks out. I already like Bristol the way it is. Maybe this roof over it will make it even cooler. Thunder Valley's going to be extra loud now.
That's true. Okay, we're back to you, Quentin.
All I'm going to say is, MJ, you're from Minnesota. You understand that domes collapse, right? If you heard me.
Probably on mute.
So would a dome even be an option at Bristol?
Okay, I'm not sure. But, Jay, what are your thoughts? Let me see if he got – I got to bring him back into the queue. That's what the problem is here. Okay.
Sorry, my phone shut. My phone shut down on me again there. So to Quentin, yeah, you're right. There are issues there with the Minneapolis Metrodome that collapsed at one time, keeping it air pressured. The one thing
multiple
I will
times.
Say, as we, yeah, the one thing when you're comparing to the Chili Bowl at Tulsa, as well as the one in Indiana, you're talking about smaller cars. And this is something I didn't mention with the dome, not only under caution of stopping the vehicles, but they parked outside. I know there was limited parking in the dome. Other than that, the cars were outside. Again, that's where they started. They were parked out there, and they'd come in just when their heat race or the race was coming up, so they'd bring them in. And we saw that at Bristol, even during this dirt race they just had, that the cars were parked outside the track, they'd bring them up in two groups, you know, the one race and the next, and then they'd have that break, get them all out, and the other ones in. When you're talking about the Cup Series and the haulers in the garage area that they normally use, I think it's something they're really going to have to look at, and I'm sure, again, that they got top people that are looking at it, but some bigger adjustments would have to be made in how the race is run. So I don't know. When you talk about racing, it's, to me, an outside type event. So I think you kind of lose something. And I've attended the race at the Dome every year kind of as a family thing. It's one of those is unique. So, you know, you do attend. I think maybe Bristol, they're reaching a little bit too far. You know, I mean, go with the dirt right now. I understand, like I said, that they're looking to protect it, especially when it's a dirt race, so they don't have that weather issue. But that also takes something away from it. And the other thing I wanted to mention with that track, I know the one in St. Louis, I don't know about the Chili Bowl, what size track that is. You're talking a fifth mile, 3/8 mile, a full half mile the size of Bristol, and then the stadium. Big money, but we know that they, like you said, are willing to risk it and take that chance for sure. So we'll have to see how much more smoke comes out of this with these discussions that they're having.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we'll have to see. They do have to put a lot of thought into it. I agree with you, Jay. It's very different than these other tracks that we're talking about. The weather factor, I think, is huge in this consideration when you think about, you know, the fact that they had to delay two races this last Bristol race because of rain. That eliminates that as a problem, I think. I think it also gives a whole new perspective to a flyover at a racetrack because you're not going to, you'll be able to see it on a screen, but yeah, you're not going to be able to see it like you normally would. But it's just a lot of things to take into consideration. But the noise and the air quality are the two biggest things that they have got to address in order to make this happen. And they've got to look at it on a much, much bigger scale, as Jay pointed out, than what currently exists. So I'm sure that these guys will do their due diligence. And I do believe if anybody can make it happen, it would be this group, as I've said before. So, Tommy, what are your thoughts?
I like Bristol the way it is. I'm fine with them keeping it that way, but the roof would be interesting, and like I said, I hope that they – I just want to look cool or whatever, you know, make it at least – I don't know. I would rather them in the way it is, but I get what they're doing with the roof. So long as they make – long as it's safe and that it keeps Bristol the way it is basically or improves it, I'm for it, but either or, I'm still a fan. So I'm still going to watch Bristol if it's dirt, under a roof, or if it's the way it used to be.
Okay. So, Quentin, let's have you bring up our next hot topic. I know you're not on our group where we list out what our hot topics are, but you probably have one on the top of your head. Actually, I think he's dropped off because I think that was the one topic that he wanted to take part in. So, Jay, you bring up the next hot topic.
All right. Well, use what we talked about there to lead into the rain, which that's going to delay dirt and asphalt either way. But now we're talking about rain tires on their testing. They tested them at Martinsville and looking at the possibility of using them on some of either the shorter tracks or flatter tracks, I believe are the two preliminary targets when they talk about rain tires. The only place they use them right now is on road courses.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts about rain tires?
I think they should definitely give them a shot if they can. Anything to prevent the rain delays, because moving races to Monday, I mean, I'm still going to try to find a way to watch them, but it would definitely be preferred for them to run it on Sunday. So if they can run them in the rain, that would definitely benefit NASCAR. And also it would make the racing even more interesting a little bit too, since the tracks would be slick. So of course I want the racing to be safe still and everything, and I want them to do it if they can, but this is good news in my opinion, because might not be no more rain delays for like Bristol and Martinsville. Well, maybe not Bristol, but Martinsville, Richmond, and some of the mile and a halfers that they might could do it on. I believe I saw that they were considering or trying to figure out where they could do race there. But yeah, this is exciting news.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good thing that NASCAR is looking into it. I'm going to be really following it closely to see what they're finding out as they test the rain tires on the different types of tracks. I think it addresses the problem that we've been running into. We've been talking about the Daytona 500. Is that even a possibility to run rain tires on a track like the Daytona Super Speedway? I don't know, but wouldn't it be great if we could go ahead and run those races in spite of the rain? We'd still be able to run those races and not have to delay them into another day. So, yeah, safety is definitely at the top of the list when they're looking into this. And like I say, I think the main thing is to keep an ear and an eye close to what happens at these tests as they're testing it, and find out what's going to happen. But if it works out for some of these tracks and it saves us from delay in a race, I think that's a big positive for NASCAR. Jay, your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and read. I know Mike had a couple of things under here, as well as Andy under our thing on there when it came up. I think Andy's one that put up Bob Pockris's tweet on it. Mike replied with good. There's no good reason they can't. Andy said, yeah, I see it as a step forward. Mike came back with, I'm game for them to try the tires on other tracks too, and I'm tired of the assumption that it can't be done. I'm only going to disagree with Mike a little bit on this. I do like it and see it as a step forward that they're willing to test it. I don't think it's a good idea any track across the board. You mentioned the Daytona 500, and there's several different ways to look at it. Obviously, the delay till Monday, when you talk about the fans that are there, that incurs a problem for them. Extra cost or delay, or again, whether or not they can even stay if they got to work Monday, or then, you know, flight schedules, all that. So I understand their desire there. But if when it comes down to it, if you've ever watched like the Rolex 24 of when they run in the rain or a road course in the rain, depending on the amount of rain, you can't see anyhow. So would you rather see them run the day you're there in the rain where you really can't see, or wait a day and see it where you can see it clearly? And I'll use the example. I attended Elkhart Lake, Road America in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. Even as the rain itself let up, while the track was still wet, the spray that these cars put up, you can't see the racing. Just as with Bristol on dirt, the dust, it was the same thing. You couldn't see because of the dust. And that goes for the drivers as well as the fans. So that's one aspect of it maybe not being a good idea. But like I said, fans that then can't stay over till Monday or wait out the delay, that it could be beneficial. I think the biggest thing is safety. And I know, Sharon, you mentioned that. That is the biggest thing, which is why I don't think that Daytona, your bigger tracks, especially your high-banked, high-speed, the road courses, it works. And, again, depending on your visibility and how it plays out, as the track dries up and you got the option of going from the rain tires to regular slicks, and them having strategy, softer tires versus the wet tires, and them having to change their lines and find the wet spots if they're still on those rain tires, is very intriguing and can provide some great racing. That race I went to, in the closing laps, and his name is slipping me, Alex Tagliani, was running down Michael McDowell because he was on the slicks and the track had dried out. Michael McDowell was still on the rain tires and they were giving up on him. So it can provide some great racing, like I said, as that track dries out and the strategies play out. And we saw that a little bit on the Daytona road course this year. Not mm-hmm. as prevalent, but it was still there some. So it does add something there. The part where I say I disagree with Mike is I realize, yeah, there's probably a way to make it where it can happen, but maybe shouldn't. Martinsville is a track where I think they picked a very good track to test it if the situation occurs. Maybe even Phoenix, it's a bigger track but a flatter track. So there are some tracks where I see it working outside of the road courses. But again, it would come back to the visibility because if they're running in the rain and the spray, both for, like I said, the drivers, which is the safety aspect for them, and then even the fans of, okay, they're racing that day, but you can't see anyway because of the spray of the rain.
Okay. That brings us back to you, Tommy.
Yeah, I didn't really consider the spray part that they put off, so... But I feel like when I have seen them race in the rain in these road courses the past couple of years that there is a little bit of the spray, but at the same time, they're not racing in the weather conditions where it's too bad that you can't see. So, but I understand the element there that you guys are talking about. But maybe they... Maybe they just race if it's like drizzling or a light rain, and then they can prevent that from happening so that way the drivers can still see and not have the spray block in their view, and then the fans can't see either. But there's definitely, I think, a ways to go because I feel like Bob Podcraft had a tweet today maybe, and I can't remember what exactly said, but he said something like, they weren't going to be ready for Martinsville or Richmond, but they were considering it for a track a month or two away, I believe. I really can't remember what it was, but they were going to do further testing until this track, and it might would be available for the track coming up. I just can't think of the name of it. I'll have to look it up, I think. But I still think it's exciting news because I'm a little bit like Michael. I think it can be done. I was hearing it on the junior download where he was saying it can be done. So I'm excited to see where it goes. And like I said, I like the exciting part of it since you're racing in the rain too. It's a little bit more challenging.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I think that you bring up some really good points, but joining us now is Andy Lasky, and we get to hear from him directly on his thoughts about rain tires.
How's it going,
guys?
I guess
I got to quit speaking for him.
Sorry I'm late, but glad I was able to get in just in time before 10:30. I understand you're talking about the rain tires that they tested at Martinsville last week, which I think is a step in the right direction. So I like the fact that we can possibly anticipate not being restricted to dry racetracks all the time. And obviously the road courses, we've seen them run on some wet weather. I mean, the Xfinity race at the Roval last fall certainly doesn't get any more wet than that. I think it's a step in the right direction that they're working on this and they're testing this. I think the intent is not to run in the rain, but I think be able to get on the track without having the track be completely dry. And I think that that's a good thing, especially tracks like Loudoun, New Hampshire that don't have lights. You know, it may mean the difference between getting a race in on the scheduled day versus a postponement. So, certainly interested to see if this comes to fruition or not, but I definitely think it's worth entertaining the idea. And, I think I came in at the end of what I think Jay or a couple of you guys were saying. Hard to say how feasible it's going to be everywhere. I mean, maybe 20 years down the road, who knows what the possibilities are. But I think that the fact they're even looking at this, it's a good thing, and I probably won't see it widespread in too many places to start. But, I think the technology is there, given the fact we're in the 21st century. So, I think it's a good thing. And like I said, I think the intent is to you know, try to help get some of these races in on their scheduled day or, you know, even in their scheduled time slot. So it certainly helps with viewership. It helps for the fans that are at the track, and I think it helps NASCAR and the teams and the fans in general. So I think I look at it as good news, and, you know, I'm interested to see where it goes.
Okay, I agree, Andy. I think it is good news that they're testing it, and I can't wait to see where it goes, actually, and what tracks they bring it to. But thinking about Daytona, the road course, I think it would work on. When you think about the Rolex 24, they've run that on the Daytona road course in the rain several times. So, but what they do is they have the lights on the cars. And I think that could help with some of the visibility issues that you bring up if somehow they would also be able to add lights to the cars so that they'd be able to see. So that's just a couple additional thoughts that I thought of as we're talking here about it. And so I guess we'll go to Jay, who brought that up. But before we do, Jay, I'm going to go ahead and do my spiel here.
Go ahead.
And that is that for anyone who is new to our show here tonight, we do go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will hear us go off the air mid-sentence as we continue our conversation. What you also need to know is that we continue recording the rest of that conversation, and that's available on our podcast. So I go out on Twitter at Fan for Racing site just to let people know that the radio show has ended and the podcast is now available. So when that happens, what you can do is go to the player that we have available at fanforracing.com and just fast forward to the two-hour mark so that you can hear the rest of that conversation. So just, again, an alert that we do every week in case there's anyone new that's listening that can kind of understand what's going on when we go off the air and how they can hear the conversation on the podcast. So with that, Jay, let's hear what your thoughts are.
Well, I got to apologize to Andy. I did speak for him a little bit there in his comments, but he expounded on something and brought up a very good point. And I know at Daytona for the road course when they did it, that they said they aren't going to run if it's a heavy torrential rain like they did at Charlotte because, again, it's a different track. However, what Andy pointed out is, if nothing else, getting back on the track quicker, or if it is a light shower that's just moving through when you're on the slicks and you can't – it's wet enough you can't run the slicks because you lose your grip, but – it's not enough where it'd be necessarily a post or a require track drying that then bringing them in, putting rain tires on and allowing them to continue. So, and I think these are all the things they are looking at. I do agree. I like the fact that they're looking at it, but I don't know that it's going to necessarily, especially when you talk about the Daytona 500, be able to prevent that race. Because again, I think if you're on the oval itself, at those speeds, I just don't know that you're ever going to get a rain tire that's going to match up and be safe for the drivers at that point. The one thing, Sharon, you brought up, and I know a lot of people wanted to make that comparison, well, the sports cars do it. You're talking about two different styles of cars, okay? Those cars are built lower to the ground, and for that, so that also comes into play. And you mentioned, I know for the when they do plan on having it at the road courses, I think they did in Montreal was the first time, and then Road America, I believe it is the just one brake light at the back of the car in the window. I don't believe it's on the car itself, but in the back window, I think one brake light is one thing they do install along with the windshield wipers. So, again, there are some things that the cars would have to be made and adjusted for. You know, right now they know it's only the road courses, so they have cars that are set up for that. If it were something to be any week that needed, there might be some more complications, or if they go having that windshield wiper and light on the car at all times, just in case. But I think that as we start, like I said, I think there are a couple of tracks where I do believe that you could, such as a Martinsville. Like I said, I think that's a good one to start with. Phoenix, again, some of your flatter tracks. So we'll see how it evolves, and maybe they do get to a point where they can, even for the Daytona 500. Then it would be a matter of what the fans can really see when it comes to how hard it is raining. So, but I like Andy's point that at least you're going to get out on the track a little bit quicker than having to wait for a full dry with the jet dryers.
That's a really good point. So, Andy, I'm going to give you a chance to do a follow-up because you did not have that opportunity. And then you can also start the next topic.
I don't really have any follow-up other than, you know, the idea definitely excites me. I think that, you know, kind of the points that I already made, I look at it only as a step in the right direction. I know one thing that, you know, Mike and I kind of chatted about in the Teams app there was that, you know, there's really no reason why it can't be done, I think, given the technology we have today. You know, I mean, Goodyear certainly is capable of making tires that should be able to handle wet weather. And, you know, the fact that they're looking into this after all these years is a good thing. So looking forward to, you know, to seeing how it comes to fruition. And, you know, certainly, you know, I think from what I've seen, the positivity of it right off the bat is a good thing. And then have you guys talked about Bristol probably seeing a roof on it someday? Has that been talked about at all?
Yeah. Or no?
We did
talk about it, Andy, but let's hear what your thoughts are about that.
I mean, it's kind of – I don't really know what to think about this one. I know that we have indoor stadiums, and some include indoor racing like the Chili Bowl for the dirt racing, the quarter – or I believe it's the quarter midgets. But I would have to think that some research is going to have to go into this because you're talking about, you know, stock cars and you're talking about a lot more people. But to the point of rain tires, I think we do live in an age where technology can accomplish some great things. And, you know, I do think it's possible that we see this happen. I don't know. It seems far-fetched to me right now, but, you know, I think that if it allows us to have weather not be as impactful as we've seen it down the road, then I look at it as a good thing. I look at all these potential changes as being positives for the sport. So I'd be curious to see how it plays out, though. This one is, like I said, a little bit of a far-fetched idea. I don't know what you guys said about it, but certainly would be intrigued to see how they go about doing something like this.
Okay. I don't know. Do we want to go around and give our brief thoughts on the Bristol race?
Well, if I may, Sharon, you know, Andy, you hit on some of the things. You just kind of put it all into one group. Well, we did specifically highlight myself from having attended the one at the Dome in St. Louis is the ventilation issues as well as the noise factor. Quentin brought up the fact of having been in Minneapolis, which there it was snow, heavy snow, but now you're looking at the possibility of what happens if the roof collapses or depressurizes for any reason, if it's a pressurized dome like Minneapolis had. So there are some factors that they definitely, like you said, have to do some research on. But as you mentioned, just the fact if the possibility of it and putting in, and Sharon likes to say, doing their due diligence, it certainly could be a possibility.
Okay. Did you want to add anything else, Tommy?
I like Bristol the way it is now. I'm about like Andy. I think all the changes are pointing in the right direction, especially with all these rain delays. It feels like they have been more frequent in the past couple of years. So I'm glad to see that they're taking steps to try to prevent the weather from impacting the races on Sunday. So I like the step they're going in, but Bristol's fine the way it is. Dirt, no dirt, roof, whatever they do, I'm behind it. I'm still a fan.
Okay. And I feel the same way. I think if anybody can make it happen, it's going to be Marcus Smith and his group. I'm curious to hear how they come up with solutions for addressing the noise and the air quality. But if they can come up with some solutions to that, to put it the way you did, Andy, in the year 2021, we should be able to find solutions for those kind of things. So, you know, we'll just kind of have to wait and see what ends up happening there. Okay, I'm going to kind of leave it at that, and then Tommy, we'll come back to you for the next topic.
Okay, let's go with Jeff Gordon testing positive for COVID over the off week.
Okay. Andy, your thoughts about that? Because it wasn't just Jeff Gordon, it was also the crew chief for Matt DiBenedetto.
Yeah, obviously glad that he's healthy. From what I read, Jeff had minor symptoms and will actually be allowed to call the racing at Martinsville this weekend. So just first and foremost, just glad that he's you know, overall doing well and overall a minor illness for him, thankfully. So not sure where they got it from. I would have to guess possibly Bristol last weekend, but it's anyone's guess. You can get it seemingly anywhere at any time, so who knows. But, you know, this is something that we kind of saw last year where, you know, a couple times some drivers and crew members at various points throughout the year were pulled either because they got COVID or because they had to follow the protocols. I think the case for Greg Irwin, the crew chief for Matt DiBenedetto, is he's following COVID protocol, not necessarily infected with the virus. So, you know, everyone's doing the right thing, obviously, and trying to keep other members of the teams as safe as they can. So just kind of a reminder that, you know, things are still going on out there. So I guess at the end of the day, just glad that Jeff didn't get very sick and he's back calling the action and moving forward this weekend.
Okay. Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, the only thought I got there is again, the fact that they're following the protocol and taking the steps necessary. I know if Jeff does call of the seclusion, I guess, if you will call it, of how to go about it. And again, in this day and age, we got the technology and ability to do that from even remote locations with the crew chief, like you said, of not necessarily having contracted it, but the symptoms or whatever, or the possibility and following protocol, which again, I think NASCAR was the leader in that. So I applaud them for that and taking those steps as far as minimizing the spread or the outbreak of it and adhering to the standard they set, which I think was a high standard, especially being the first ones out to kind of come back from it as a sport.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Tommy?
I'm just glad that he's okay and that he's still going to be able to call the race on Sunday. I mean, Clint Bowyer's got to have somebody to make jokes about and jokes with and stuff. So glad that he'll still be in the booth. Glad that he's okay. So I actually thought that Greg Ives, Matt DiBenedetto's critique, I actually thought he tested positive too, but I didn't realize he was just in COVID protocol, because I was about to say it's kind of odd how Gordon can still be there, but Greg Ives can't be, but that wasn't the case. So, but and then also I was a little bit surprised too. I guess Jeff Gordon hasn't gotten the COVID shot yet because he's got COVID. So, or maybe you can still get COVID even if you get the shot. But glad that he's okay and glad that he'll still be in the booth. I'm glad it's not just going to be Bowyer and Mike Joy, although that still probably would have been entertaining.
Okay, Andy.
No follow up on this one. But yeah, like what everyone said, you know, just glad that glad things weren't worse.
Okay, Jay, any follow up?
Well, to follow on what Tommy said there, I think the difference with Jeff Gordon in the booth, and I don't know if you've noticed that on the television broadcast, they kind of each have their own cubicle up there where they got the plexiglass in between them. When you're talking about a crew chief, especially if he's down on the crew box or whatever, where you're closer contact with multiple people with the crew, is part of that as far as what, why one's not and one is, two different scenarios, if you will. Like I said, I've seen in the booth where they have the plexiglass in between each of the broadcasters. When they show it from a certain angle, you can see that. So, I just applaud NASCAR for having the protocol, setting the standard, and adhering to it.
Yeah, I think another factor in that, though, Jay, is that you can be tested within after 24 hours. You can go back and be retested again. Jeff Gordon said he had minor symptoms. I'm guessing the reason he's able to come back is because he probably tested negative in that second 24 hours later. So I'm not sure that that's the case with Greg Ives, or it's possible that there's not enough time for him to do that second test to be able to still be involved this weekend. So that's what I think it is, even though what you're saying is absolutely true, they minimize the spread of it with those partitions. Plexiglass partitions that they have up there in the booth. But I think it has more to do with the fact that they take that second test and test negative. That gives them the clearance, if you will, to be able to come back. Tommy, did you have any follow-up?
No, ma'am. Just glad that Jeff's okay and that he'll still be calling the race.
Okay, Jay, did you have any follow-up?
No, I'm good.
So let's go. I think it's your turn, Jay, for the next topic.
All right. Well, it's part of what Mike had posted, the official Gen 7 reveal coming May 5th. Looks like we'll finally see what each manufacturer's skin looks like on the car. Reddit rumors say there might be a surprise reveal of a new manufacturer, but if so, it would be the best-kept secret on the history of the sport. And I wish I could recall where I heard it. One of the interviews with one of NASCAR's top executives, I can say that much, made a statement that really made me believe that we are very close to seeing a new manufacturer in NASCAR, and that's the part of it that I want to talk about. Again, he didn't give it as a guarantee, but alluded to it very, 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 very strongly that we're going to see it coming, if not next year with the start of the Gen 7 car, but very soon.
Okay, so Andy, I guess we'll go to you next. Or no, let's go to Tommy.
I'm super excited if there is a secret, cause I can only guess. I mean, they've got the Camaro, they've got the Mustang, and the Xfinity Series has the Supra, but I believe that they were not going to do the Camry. Weren't they going to do the Supra for this? But either way, thought is the Challenger or Charger from Dodge, just because why not have all the sports cars? But I feel like I remember reading an article last year or maybe earlier this year that Honda wanted to get involved, so I don't see why they would not be an option. But I feel like also reading that Honda one, that they also said that they were a few years down the road. And I believe this might have been in January, if I remember, because it was right around the time of the Rolex 24 with all those different cars. I'm just interested to see if there is a secret and what it will be. That will be awesome. And then I'm also excited to see what the car looks like, too. I've always loved the paint schemes as a kid and still to this day. Like, I'm so excited that William Byron's got that 24 car looking the way he does. A lot of people gave it some flack. I'm all for it because it's not an exact replica of Gordon's, but it's different and it is definitely noticeable on the track. So I'm really excited to see what these street, because I know they're going to look like street cars. So I can't wait, and I really do hope there is a secret.
Okay, now it's your turn, Andy.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the manufacturer-specific cars come out on, I believe it's May 5th, so really looking forward to that, and looking forward to what the future for NASCAR brings, and I think this car signifies some significant changes moving forward. And I strongly believe that manufacturers, new ones that is, are probably in the works as we speak. You know, I'm sure there's some non-disclosures and, you know, things people can't say. Maybe things aren't as far along as I think they are, but I think the intent with this race car, the new Gen 7 car, was to bring in new manufacturers and new people and new eyes on the sport, and I think it will do just that. You know, obviously, you know, hated to see Dodge leave several years ago. It'd be kind of fun to see Mopar. I know Jay would love this too. It'd be fun to see Mopar and Dodge return, as well as possibly some others. Wouldn't be surprised to see possibly Honda, Hyundai, Mazda, who knows? I mean, the possibilities are pretty endless. You know, and I think when you've got more manufacturers, you know, it just means more competition. And certainly the greater the competition, the better product I think we can have. So I see this as nothing but a good thing moving forward. And certainly, you know, I think this car is going to really change things a lot. Truthfully, I think that, you know, the NASCAR that we've come to expect and know the last 20, 30, 40 years is in the direction of significant change right now. And change can be a really good thing. And I think that those who are making the decisions about the future of the sport are really trying hard to combine old with new. And, you know, I certainly think that, you know, this race car signifies good changes. I think, you know, this is a little bit off topic, but, you know, schedule changes, I think all this stuff, when you tie it together, means some bright future, you know, certainly a very bright future ahead for the sport. So, but specifically about manufacturers, I strongly believe we will see one, maybe two, and who knows, maybe three new manufacturers within the next 5 years. That might be a bit ambitious, but there's definitely got to be some things going on.
I agree. I think it's anytime you bring a new manufacturer in, I think it strengthens the sport as a whole. And to me, this seems like the top candidates would be something from Dodge or from Hyundai. Or Honda, I mean. So it is going to be interesting. I'm anxious to see what this new car looks like. And they're going to have all three manufacturers showing their version of the new car. I think that's going to be fantastic to see. But I'm just kind of curious, if it's not a new manufacturer, what that surprise might be. So I'm guessing it is something along those lines. If not for this year, maybe the following year, it wouldn't surprise me if they announce it a year ahead of time of when that new manufacturer might be coming in, because there are so many T's to cross and I's to dot for a manufacturer to come into this sport. But we'll see what happens. It's going to be exciting to see these cars, and I'm excited for the season to begin with the new car, and I hope it lives up to the expectations. So, Jay, your thoughts?
My thoughts right now are y'all are killing me. I know normally we do this at the end of the show, but, yeah, you follow me on MoparMJ on Twitter and MoparMJ on Instagram. But I've been down this road before. Dodge left and they came back once already and left again. And I've heard that, and I try not to get too wrapped up in it. I would love to see it. And as Tommy said, with the car of the Challenger makes sense fitting into the Cup level. However, realistically, Honda has always been the forefront of that conversation. So if that's the case, I do think it would be Honda or another manufacturer of that aspect that we haven't seen at all before. You guys are getting me pumped up about the Dodge thing, and I'm going to end up crying. So, well, like I said, the one thing I will agree with here, I like when you talk about it brings the competition level. We look at when Toyota came in, how they went about it, and they came in dominant. All these other manufacturers then have to step up, and they've done so. We've seen that with Chevrolet, with Ford. The other aspect that I look at it is, and I think it was maybe Stuart Haas when they switched from Chevy to Ford, which was a pretty well-kept secret at that time and blew some people, myself included, out of the water, that you have one or two top teams that are backed by the manufacturer. If a new manufacturer comes in, some of these teams that we keep talking about of being really close to six, being a top-tier team, that's what they need. And just off the top of my head, we'll talk about Front Row Motorsports and Michael McDowell. They've showed that progression and where they're at. If they were the top team for a manufacturer, a new one coming in and getting that manufacturer support, I think would put them at that top level to be competing week in and week out. So I do think that is a good thing from that aspect. Excuse me. But like I said, I had one other thought here. If Mike is Mr. Negativity, Andy's a little Mr. Positivity. I don't know if I see three new ones within, you know, the next couple of years. I think you might be stretching a little far there, Andy.
Yeah, that's probably overly ambitious. I'll admit that.
But it is possible to have more than one. I'm going to go somewhere in between. Because I do think it's possible to have more than one. Okay. So I don't have my paper with me tonight, so are we on the second round now of this? So, Tommy, your follow-up thoughts.
Go back around to Tommy. There we go.
I was just going to add that I saw that Mike has said that this is coming from Reddit rumors. I actually look on Reddit quite a bit myself at, you know, random stuff on the internet. So I actually find that what comes out on Reddit, it's usually a good source for finding something that's true. So I definitely think that the secret is going to be something. And right now I'm still leaning towards Dodge and Honda. It's got to be one of those two. It just has to be, because the Challenger being brought back to compete with the Ford and the Camaro makes too much sense. But then maybe Honda said what they said back in January or whenever I read it last year to say that, just so that way we wouldn't be thinking about them. But then I'm thinking, you know, Toyota does not have, like the Camry does not have anything like them in the series and the Supra, so maybe it's time for them to get, Honda and Toyota versus Chevy and Ford, I guess. I don't know, but I'm super excited. I'm ready to see what the secret is, even if there isn't one or if there is one, but I'm also super excited to see what the Chevy, Ford, and Toyota look like.
Okay. Andy.
I don't really have any follow-up to this one, but I definitely think that, you know, something's brewing down the road. And, you know, to think that it'll just be the current manufacturers, I think probably isn't true. And, you know, I would expect to see some additions, you know, certainly sooner than later.
Okay. I don't have any follow-up either, Jay. So your final thoughts on this?
Tommy, quit trying to bring me down that road. I don't want to be hurt again. I'm there, and when they finally announce it, I'll be the one to celebrate the most, but I'm not going to pin my hopes on it because, like I said, that one's been there year in and year out. Oh, they could come back. I think it was when Carl Edwards left that they were coming with the Dodge team. Michael Andretti from IndyCar was going to come over with the Dodge team, so... I just, like I said, that one I got to wait until I see it, and I will celebrate when it does, trust me in that. But I really think Honda is going to be the first one. BMW is one that has been kind of kicked around once or twice. You hear little rumblings, but Honda has been at the forefront, and if that's not what it is now, I'm with Andy. It's coming soon. There's been too much talked about. Again, where there's smoke, there's fire. So it will come eventually, and I do think it is a very high possibility. Now, like Sharon said, you know, it might be that they announce it this year for 2022. You'll let them get one season of the new car under their belt, and they'll come in 22, but they might announce it now, and that gives them that year plus to work out all the details and come in full bore like Toyota did. So we'll have to wait and see. Again, I'm not rooting against it, but I'm not putting my hopes yet on Dodge.
Okay. With that, we'll go ahead and go on to our roundtable. And, Tommy, we'll start off with you. I know you've got an article that you're going to have coming out, and you can talk about that. And I will just let you know, my time has been really taken up. I've got two new puppies, and they are keeping me very, very busy.
Hey, good luck with those puppies. I got a dog 2 years ago, and he's finally now starting not to act like a puppy anymore. So, yeah, I understand. But so since I live in North Carolina, I was watching that Junior and Marcus Smith podcast on YouTube and seeing, you know, reading about it and seeing some of the clips from it. But I'm in North Carolina, and North Wilkesboro is here, and they brought up the idea of bringing North Wilkesboro back. So I wrote a quick article about that and sent it to Sharon. So I'm excited that it's going to get posted. I threw it together pretty quickly, but I think I've got some good stuff in there. And since we're doing the roundtable part, I actually did finally create a Twitter fan NASCAR page for myself. I didn't realize with Twitter you can't change your Twitter handle, so at the current moment it's at Since95Fan, but it's actually NASCAR Fan Since 95. That's the name of my new account. So I've only got one follower at the moment, and that's Jay, so please follow me. And I'll start tweeting when I get a little bit more followers, because the first tweet I've got is going to be a suggestion for Darlington throwback.
Okay, sounds good. Jay, your follow-up.
Well, I appreciate the shout-out there, Todd. Yeah, I was going to say, I appreciate the shout-out there, Tommy, but truthfully, I had to take a gamble because it didn't have your name, but I saw it was from North Carolina, and it was a new account, so I assumed it was you and took that chance in following you.
Yeah, can you say it one more time, the name, though, real quick, Tommy?
Well, I can't change my Twitter handle yet. Apparently, when you create a new account, they give you one, and then after 2 weeks, you can change it. So at the current moment, it's at Since95Fan, or you could type in NASCARFanSince95.
Okay. Okay, I've got it here. Okay, go ahead, Jay.
All right, now he's going to have two followers, three, and he's going to write it down, and you're going to have three, just like that. You can follow me, Michael Hoosman, on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. We'll see if eventually we get to tweet about the return of Dodge. Tommy and I will be the first two to do that, I guess. And I'm going to sing a little song, Rain, Rain, Go Away. I was supposed to be busy Friday and Saturday this weekend. Unfortunately, Magnolia Motor Speedway has already rained out and rescheduled for 2 weeks from now. At this point, though, Jackson Motor Speedway, your capital city raceway, is still planning to go on as scheduled, and I will be there to announce for them. And working on a Michael McDowell article, as I mentioned with that, of a new manufacturer. But just looking at what him and Front Row Motorsports have done this year already, I know it's possible. We talked about he may not make the playoffs, but you can't take away winning the Daytona 500 and where that team has gone in steps this year. So look for that coming out this week. Hopefully I can finish that up and get it to Sharon.
Okay. And Andy, we've posted your fan at the track today. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
my apologies again for the delay.
No, that's okay. I'm just glad I was finally able to get that done. I was supposed to have written one for Daytona, and it slipped my mind. So glad that I was able to get the Bristol perspective on paper, so that's been published. Happy about that, certainly. And Tommy, I think I owe you an apology. I think I blocked that account the other day, not knowing who it was. I thought it was a bot. So I will rectify that in short order.
Oh, no.
I will make sure that I take care of that. But I don't know about you guys, but I get a lot of weird followers, and I'm just sometimes I think a lot of them are bots or something. So I will make sure I fix that. But happy that racing's back. Certainly, I think last weekend was a much needed off weekend. You know, certainly, enjoyed spending Easter with family. But I'm glad we're not only racing, but we're short tracking it at Martinsville, which is my favorite racetrack of them all. So hopefully the weather cooperates for those that get to go, and hopefully we'll see some good racing. Not sure I can watch any of it live, unfortunately. I am working this weekend, but I'll try to catch what I can.
Okay, I'm looking forward to Martinsville Speedway this weekend. It's going to be some really great racing. I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter and Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, which is our website. We do have, in addition to Tommy's article, Mike has submitted his next hot seat article on the hot seat article, and I'll try to get those out over the weekend. I am going to be on the road a little bit over the weekend, as well as, kind of trying to get things done in between chasing down puppies. I think we'll be able to get both of those articles up sometime this weekend. At least that's my intention. But a big shout out to our listeners tonight. We did have our challenges tonight, Jay. And Jay kind of helped me out quite a bit because I called him just a few minutes before the show with all kinds of things going on that I was worried about. But it all worked out. And unfortunately, my computer was giving me a lot of trouble here tonight. So I apologize for the awkward flow of tonight's show. But we'll be back on track with Monday night's show and back to our usual routine. So thank you for bearing with us. And it was a good night tonight on Hot Topics. A big thank you to our Fan for Racing crew. You guys always come through and do some really great things here on Fan for Racing Radio. So I appreciate that, as well as everything you do with the articles that you submit for the website as well. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you to all of our Fan for Racing crew members. And then, of course, this Monday we'll have the recap from Sam Bornhorst, as well as the next power ranking from Owen Stewart. So thank you to everybody participating here with Fan for Racing. And with that, I guess we're ready to say a good night for tonight, and looking forward to the weekend of racing.
All right, have a good night.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.